Okay.
No gavel here.
It's over there, I'll get it. Hold on.
Hello.
Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
I call to order the Committee of Budget and Appropriations.
I'm here.
With the proper
court present. Folks.
You here all week?
Did you see?
In order of priority.
Off to set.
We will, this is actually item number 3504. On the agenda number 6. And Norma Drummond and Company are here. Norma, First Avenue fellow.
Yes, actually Mary Ann will do the introduction of the project.
All right, Mary.
Hello. Thank you. Some of the legislators heard at the housing meeting. This development is in Pelham, which is a B community under the stipulation and settlement, where we are able to develop 60 units of housing, and this would be our first three. The development consists of a three-family home with one homeowner unit, which is a two-bedroom, and two rental apartments. One is a two-bedroom, one is a one-bedroom, all of which would be rehabilitated. The units are currently vacant. The property was acquired by a developer prior to its foreclosure, and the location is excellent. It's located in a residential neighborhood adjacent to a church and within walking distance to the Metro North Station. It's also within walking distance to Pelham's retail shopping district, and the Hutchinson River Parkway, which is the major north-south artery, is also easily accessible. The development is within the Pelham Unified School District, so the children of potential tenants and homeowners, homeowner and tenants, will be eligible to attend the Pelham schools. The location within Westchester is on the New Haven line of Metro North, about 30 minutes to Midtown Manhattan, so local employment opportunities are available as well as access to Manhattan. So from the standpoint of the stipulation and settlement, this is an ideal property, and we're very excited about it, and I will defer to planning to walk you through the financing thereof.
Sure. This is actually a property that was headed toward foreclosure. One of our developers, Lou Larizza, was able to purchase it for a total of $350,000 in its as-is condition. We did have an appraisal done on the property, even though we are not acquiring the property, but we still had an appraisal done just as standard operating procedure. The property appraised in its as-is condition for $400,000. So, you know, again, so this is a property headed toward foreclosure that he was able to save. We are estimating that, we're pretty confident at this point, that the total amount of funding required to be able to rehabilitate the property, there are pictures in your executive summary, by the way, that gives you some sense of what it looks like, but don't be overly impressed because of its as-is condition, okay? But the total to purchase the property to rehabilitate it, and then because we're looking to sell it at an affordable sale price so that the homeowner who will purchase this property will actually purchase this three-family house for $325,000. So there's a total subsidy needed of $240,000, of which $120,000 will come from the county's Fair and Affordable Fund, so that's only $40,000 per unit, so it's below the average of what's available per se. But again, it's all that's needed. And the other $120,000 will come from a New York State AHC grant. And I'm going to caution you, this committee, that the New York State AHC board will be meeting on Thursday to approve this grant. The county is the applicant, not the developer. We have been assured by the state that our application is complete, and they expect a successful board decision on at their meeting on Thursday. But again, in the event that this is not approved, we would not have it move any further. We would now have it go to the full board on Monday the 8th. So our total subsidy required is $120,000 for the three-family unit. We have a developer who, because he found the property, he'll be the one to get the rehabilitation and finish it up. Probably the unit will be available for resale probably around March of next year.
This is the smallest affordable housing project that I could think of.
No, we've got a two-family house here and there.
Not in my tenure that I can remember. Remember, I always stand on the floor and brag about this.
But again, usually because it's not worth the bond money to come with only two or three units. We'll usually fund that with CDBG or home funds that we'll do. Actually, this is our third fair and affordable project. Our first project, well, we did Edgar Place, the 18 units there, but then we also have a project in Yorktown with three units, and that's just home funds. There's no fair and affordable housing funds in there.
The reason why I mentioned the units, I'm not, hey, listen, even if it is one, mm-hmm. you know, we have a 750
right.
goal to meet. In this instance, a foreclosure property, is it being then advertised that this opportunity is there and developers are actually being enticed to do this type of a flip, if you will? That's what it's called in the industry.
We've had a whole lot of meetings with individual meetings with developers. We've always talked about wanting to do a larger meeting with developers, but really until the monitor approves certain components of the implementation plan, it's a little difficult for us to do that larger meeting with developers because really nobody said these are the areas that are an analysis of the census, that these are the eligible areas. Nobody's ever confirmed that for us. That's what the implementation plan is supposed to do. So until we get that confirmation, it's just, you know, we really don't want to be out there with the information's on the website, but we really haven't met with as a group with developers. But that's been our intention to do that. We want to meet with banks, we want to meet with real estate agencies as well, just because we know if we say to them, go forth, find us the properties, they're going to go out and do their due diligence and do that for
us. All right, now the guarantees, I just want to finish my train of thought. The guarantees is somebody would purchase this property for $325, you mentioned, mm-hmm. right? And the guarantee is that these are going to be rental units?
Well, two will be rental. The third will be that homeowner, it must be their primary residence.
Homeowners. And the limitation as far as how much they can charge?
There will be limitations on what they can charge. It's going to be based on the home rents. Mm-hmm. There will be maximum rents of what they're allowed. And we calculate that into what's the appropriate sale price, because realistically, we know what the rents are right now. The banks allow us to calculate 75% of that debt or of that income coming in toward their, what they support their mortgage.
Each unit would rent for about how much? Of the one bedroom?
About
$1,100 on the one, and $1,350 on the two.
Yeah.
And for the area, that's very affordable. Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Morning.
We certainly have heard this in HPO, and certainly I know that all of us are in support of the project. I just had a couple of questions. You said that what meeting is on Thursday?
New York State Affordable Housing Corporation.
Okay. Do we have any other projects that are in our list of projects that are on the list of the housing projects that you had in the pipeline that would also be going after that money that also is in an impacted situation, as far as you know? I mean, if you don't have
for
that...
For this Thursday's meeting?
For this, not for this Thursday's meeting. Are there any other developers that are in the list of the 2,000... I mean, the list of projects that we had
right.
that are in the pipeline mm-hmm. that were waiting for the HIF or New Homes Land or anything like that that we have talked to that are in the similarly situated where they have they could be negatively impacted by us not taking action before the end of the year. So is there a list of those things? And if you don't have it handy dandy, that's fine. But, you know, if we could create one, because I want to understand, Mr. Chairman, through you, that we should understand if there's other projects that are in jeopardy of having their state funding or state funding not happen because of inaction by the county's part.
Right.
So if we can have that as well, that would be appreciative. And the second thing, I was confused about something else you just mentioned, which was that you said that the implementation plan would identify the eligible communities. The eligible communities are defined, aren't they defined in the 7A, B, and C portions of the stipulation agreement?
The 7A, B, the paragraphs define what they should be. Who actually analyzes the analysis of the census data is actually done through the implementation plan. So through the implementation plan, we present, it will be presented, what we have determined based on the formula that was in the stipulation, what are the eligible blocks for Category 7A, 7B, and 7C.
But the communities are already identified. The only question that you would be determining at this at the time of the project being presented on whether or not they meet the criteria as set forth with the percentages in the census block and census tract. But the communities are identified.
Mm-hmm. Communities are not identified.
31 communities.
The communities are. The
communities. Because again, that's been our interpretation from day one based on our review of census data.
No. There's a legal thing right now. So the question, the 31 communities are identified. The only question is if you have a project, the only question as far as I know, Mr. Chairman, through you, is whether or not a particular block, you know, census block would be eligible for development in the fair and affordable housing plan. So the we know the communities. It's not that the, out of the 31 communities, all of a sudden it's not going to be 35 or 27. The only question is if the particular project that you're presenting is going to fit into the criteria of A, B, or C based on the census block information, which you would not know ahead of time. So, I mean, I'm just saying through you, Mr. Chairman, it just seemed to me, that when you said that, I was like, oh, wait a minute, that's new, because that would be a surprise. The communities are identified as the 31 communities based on that, because that information was presented before the stipulation agreement was signed.
Can I have some clarification on that? I know, Norma, you have to leave pretty soon.
Yeah.
Do you have a little more time? Mr. Jenkins, you want to put it maybe in an email form?
I will do that, Mr. Chairman. I understand.
And this item was already visited by housing.
But we never saw the picture, and I can see that there is a picture.
It was in the executive summary.
It was in
the executive summary. Oh, we don't have that here.
All right, Mr. Regatta.
Yeah, I know you have to leave.
On the item.
Don't be super impressed.
I'm trying to understand from the budget point of view. Ordinarily, we buy something and give it to the developer for dollars. You
say
the developer has money into this thing.
Right.
So I'm trying to see how this works. Somebody's going to buy it. That person will be the landlord and will be renting to the other two because it's a three-family.
They will be an owner-occupied. It will be owner-occupied
right.
residence.
So the developer, once Louis Larissa sells this order, he's out of it. Right?
He's out of it.
So they're going to buy it. Presumably they get a mortgage. They're going to buy it. They're going to be the landlord. And you know, it's just very difficult. Something breaks at these rents. I'm just concerned. I mean, it's a nice, potentially a nice model, but the rents are going to be fixed. I can really envision 2 years from now, this thing falling apart. Because, you know, do we know, we look at the, because there's no numbers here, what's built in for reserves, for making repairs, I assume the landlord is going to be responsible for repairs of these tenants are going to full respond. You know, this is a real estate deal. So, and how does this work? If ordinarily the developer gets the property for a dollar, Louis has $350,000. So why does this work when the developer has $350,000 and usually we sell it for a dollar? There's no numbers in front of us. I'm just curious how on three units, that's $120,000 a unit that the developer has into the deal.
Okay.
How does this happen? I mean, is he in the
okay,
development?
Because there's an acquisition cost, then there's a cost of rehabilitation. So when you really look at all told, what
is he getting his money back?
He's getting his money back. Correct.
We're only giving $40,000 a unit. If he paid.
But there's an additional $40,000 per unit coming from New York State. So there really is $80,000 per unit in subsidy. It's only $40,000 per unit from the county.
That's $240,000.
Yes.
But he's paid $350.
Right.
Who's doing the repair? You know.
And so he's going to he'll actually do the rehab work, and our rehab specialist confirmed the work that needs to get
money,
done.
Where's the money for the rehab coming from? Is that extra? Is that extra money, or is that a?
It's all no. It's all part of the subsidy.
He paid $350.
Right.
So he's out of pocket $350.
He's
paying $240,
but he's selling it for $325. So
okay.
He's really only out of pocket for $25,000.
Well, but he's going to spend some money fixing this up.
Right. So the $240,000 is
for the fix up.
The fix up, the legal costs.
Okay. So I mean, I don't know. All right. So I'm not worried. He'll make a little money on this thing. So now the homeowner has it.
He'll make a lot of money.
And we're satisfied for the next so many years that based on the fixed rents, like ETPA, based on the fixed rents, this homeowner is going to be able to maintain those two units for, you know, the water breaks or something?
We are. We have done the analysis. We do the analysis right out for the first 30 years.
I mean, we should, you know, ordinarily we get numbers here. We don't have any numbers to see how this works.
We did.
We did in housing, but not here.
This is the budget committee. Housing can like the idea. The budget committee is where...
There is a whole performer that was done and given to the board.
It's not here.
It was only went to housing.
It was okay.
I mean, housing could look at
it should have,
you know,
we should
budget agree. Needs to look at the numbers. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Because I mean, I'm looking at this and I don't buy it. I mean, I hope it works. It sounds great.
Marty is in real estate. He's coming from the real estate. He doesn't sound like anybody who want to purchase something as a unit as small as this with two rental units and the owner lives there.
How
much responsibility? Long term, what are the guarantees? And that's a legitimate concern.
But again, part of the assurance that should be here for the landlord to be able to afford this is the bank is only looking at 75% of the income that he gets in. And so when you look at the 75% of the income, and then again, you allow a vacancy rate, so we allow another 25% of vacancy rate, there's actually more income coming into the landlord from these units that allows him to put the money away in a capital reserve.
But if housing saw the numbers, that's great, but in the future, the budget committee should also see the numbers.
Ms. Chairman, just real quick, for this particular item, the question I have for both Mary and for Norma is, if we delay until we get this information, is not an issue because it just has to be approved at the next board meeting,
right?
So, Mr. Chairman, maybe the suggestion is, because the numbers are not here for budget, that we get those numbers and then we just take this up for the next meeting. If that's a suggestion.
Okay, and I would add, and as
November 8th.
As you all know, because you've worked with the programs for a long time, there will be a selection process for the homeowner, would include that family receiving homeowner counseling and being certified for affordable housing, and as an aspect of their preparation by one of the HUD certified counseling agencies, they would be trained in how to be a landlord. And many of the models that we've discussed with the monitor have been exactly this sort of model. It's actually the second one, though one hasn't come forward to you, it's been conceptually approved, of a homeowner with an accessory apartment. So the small unit in a community, and particularly one which allows for a blend of home ownership and rental, is one that from the monitor's standpoint and his advisors is one that they've encouraged. I regret that you don't have the numbers in front of you. I didn't know that to be the case. I thought they had been supplied. But I understand from working with planning and the discussions with the monitor, it's not a novel concept, and it's one with the proper counseling they very much encourage. But you obviously are satisfied with the numbers.
Yeah, so we'll revisit it 2 Mondays from now. We will not be meeting and going into that detail. Norma, since you
and in the meantime, we'll make sure we get to Sally the executive please. Summary so she can get it out. Because really, the whole performance is on there.
Thanks so much. For me, it's the smallest I've seen at this table so far. That's why I highlighted it. And Marty is coming at it from the real estate angle, which is...
Mr. Chairman, if you're lucky, we'll get one unit coming out of Harrison, so be prepared for one. We ever get to that point.
All right.
Are we getting more?
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Moving on the priority list here, we have Commissioner Hsu with item 3496, jointly with you, Mr. Chairman.
Are those relatively new, right, though? Because I only noticed them about a month ago.
This is two meetings. I got the first meeting. So.
Hey, John, how are you?
Are they the ones that get darker in the...
No, they just have this shape.
Public Works, Parks, Labor, and Transportation Committee to order.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
For purposes of meeting jointly with the Budget Appropriations Committee on four items this morning.
Snow season.
Oh, look!
That's cute. It's called 10-11 Snow Season.
As long as, get her on, put it on, leave.
Always increases.
Well, what happens is that we always put in a CPI number for the municipalities, and it's really the not to exceed 3.5% increase in CPI. So typically in the last 2 years, Social Security's gone zero, so they would get zero. But when in fact Social Security goes up, we give them the same CPI, but not to exceed 3.5, just for budgeting purposes. And that's primarily to accommodate the labor costs and the initial salt costs.
Gordon Burroughs.
Hey.
Typically, the IMA is for 5 years with the local municipalities. As you noticed in the last IMA that we asked the board to approve, we've since reduced it from 33 to 31 communities. Those communities have taken on some additional county roads as part of other arrangements and are no longer eligible for reimbursement for snow and ice because they're no longer county roads. The with and without incentive is denoted by the asterisk on the left of the column. For those communities that do in fact have salt domes, there is an additional reimbursement because of the environmental benefit of having salt sheds. The majority of the smaller communities do in fact have salt sheds. And as they in fact build salt sheds and notify us, we will make the change in the actual reimbursement to that municipality.
Are there salt sheds in Bronxville, Eastchester, and or Yonkers?
Yonkers does not have salt sheds, county roads. Bronxville, we have no county roads in Bronxville.
Eastchester has what?
Yes.
It has a salt shed.
Mm-hmm. Where's the salt shed?
In the yard.
Where?
What they keep in the yard?
Yeah.
That's it. The yard. Like a hotel.
Okay, but it's got to have a dome or something. It's a salt. It's usually a dome facility.
Which one? Salt shed? The one that's by Murray.
Yeah.
They built one. They built one up by Murray.
That's why.
All I got is let me know.
They actually expanded it.
Really? Up on Murray Street, anyway, off the Hill Road.
Yeah.
Okay. Because on Nevern Avenue, you have no salt domes there in the main yard.
No, they built it.
So if we can demonstrate there is a dome.
All they have to send me a letter saying we have a dome.
And so there'll be some kind of reimbursement.
We increased the reimbursement. They get a little more.
I think we should. You want to send a joint letter?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, send it to me and we'll make the change.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Bernice? Yeah. Jose? You want to do it as the budget chair or you want me to do it? It's up to you. Larry, would you do a letter on behalf of all four of us saying that, this came out and we have a dome and subject to some kind of reimbursement from the county? You should look into it?
Sure.
Run it by me and then run it by Jose.
Fine.
We typically reimburse after the conclusion of the winter season. We could always make intermediate payments. It's in the operating budget. It really makes no difference to us. So if some municipalities are strapped for cash, we can make a payment as soon as the budget's adopted, the 11 budget. And pay it over 3 months or pay it over 4 months. Typically, we pay it in May. And normally, we just pay it in May. Now, the biggest problem with the snow and ice agreement is we send out individual contracts to each municipality. They're very, very not diligent getting back to us. If we don't have a signed contract, they don't exist in finance. So we normally have to chase them in May or June to make sure that they return the contract.
You do have a format. Can you forward a format of what the contract looks like to Larry so that we have something?
Sure. Once you guys approve it, we'll send you contracts and I'll send copies of, it's a standard contract that we send to all 31 municipalities.
Any major limitations as to why a municipality wouldn't want to
maybe they get lost in the paperwork?
That's probably.
Have you sent them out yet?
No, we can't do that.
Because they're waiting for the contract.
Yes, I know. We're waiting for the board. As soon as the board will go and see them, we'll send them right out. Not a problem. It's pretty standard cookie cutter.
Just let me mention, I want to ask her if she has any questions, but we have our legislator, Alfreda Williams, on the phone this morning and in a position to listen and ask some questions. Alfreda, I assume that you can hear the discussion on the item that's in front of us now. I wanted to make sure you had an opportunity to ask any questions if you had any at this point.
No questions at this point, but thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Nice.
So that was tea.
Tea.
So any more comments or questions or concerns on this item? Otherwise, a motion is in order.
So moved.
Second by Ms. Marcotte.
I have a motion for Public Works.
So moved.
Second.
And then a second. Any further discussion on this proposed IMA?
Thank you,
gentlemen. Motion and a second. Vote for both committees. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
That's in Rye City. John?
Item is reported to the floor.
All right, so no Rye City here?
Rye's in there.
So,
oh, I see it up top. Sorry.
Yeah. We had you down for comments on vehicles. You said so. Who's going to report?
I think George is going to do the vehicles.
All right.
Yeah, he's not here yet.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
We have no way. On sewer district?
Yes.
Mount Pleasant.
Yeah. Do you want to take the lead on that?
They're active, huh?
Well, the two committees have before them two resolutions and an act. Items 3462, the modification, the removal of property from Mount Pleasant, Sawmill River Valley Sanitary Sewer District specifically. 3463 is an act modifying that same sewer district. Removal of 9 properties, and 3482, a resolution setting a public hearing on the proposed modification again to the Sawmill Valley Sanitary Sewer District, and again these 9 properties, all laid out listed in the item in your packet. So maybe we could take all of these for discussion at one time.
Yes.
Be so kind to just identify yourself.
Marion Pompa, Associate Engineer, Environmental Facilities. These are 9 single-family residential parcels in various locations in town of Mount Pleasant. They're all on septic. They're not connected to any local or county sewers. They're all large enough properties to support septics long-term, so they've petitioned to be removed from the district. We have no objection to them coming out of the district.
Any discussion on these on this proposal, Mr. Regas?
One question. Yes. I think when we say large enough, I mean we've had some discussions over the years. Is the criteria now? Are you still looking at an acre, half an acre? Is
40,000 square feet in area? So the minimum lot size.
Your minimum lot's 40,000.
What is 40,000? Is that
it's
larger?
It's just shy of an acre. It's like 9/10.
Any other comments or concerns for both committees? Otherwise, a motion for budget and appropriation is in order.
So moved.
Second.
Public Works.
So moved.
Second.
And finally, any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, then these items, the two resolutions on the act, are reported to the full board.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the
at this point, accept the motion to adjourn on Public Works.
Motion.
So moved.
So moved and second.
Second.
All in favor?
Say aye.
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 Aye. Okay.
1:30.
Public Works meeting is adjourned. This portion of the day's calendar. Our next meeting will be at 1:30, joined with legislation.
And then 4 again?
And then 4 again.
All right, moving right along, the next item on our priority list is the HIV AIDS care, in community service also. WCHCC, West Rockland, Putnam, HIV AIDS care. Item 3486. Sir, welcome for the record, if you don't mind introducing.
Good morning, I'm Tom Petrow from the Health Department, and I administer the Ryan White HIV AIDS. That's a federal program. It's fully 100% federal funding passing through the Health Department for services to the community. And the act is to continue services provided by Westchester County Health Care Corporation, which is medical case management and dental services for people with HIV and AIDS.
Any changes from the prior?
There's no change. There was a little bit of additional funding that we got this year from the federal grant. So there's some addition added to the budget here.
Do you want to tell Bill that?
To the COLA. For the dental program and a little bit extra for the medical case management program because they have the largest number of clients of any of our programs is served at Westchester Medical. They have over 400 folks.
And at the service end, is this something that is publicized? Do our Westchester residents suffer in the AIDS? Are very familiar with this type of...
I would hope they're all... All very familiar. We have a directory of all of our resources that we put on the website, and we keep it updated year to year. It's interactive, so you can search by county, because as you know, we're serving also Rockland and Putnam with funding as well. We have, I guess, 20 tried and true providers. They're providing everything from medical service up through to support. Services as well.
Do we have did Alfreda leave the phone line? She's still there? I think this is an item for community services to look into as far as who are we reaching and whether most of all Westchester people are taking advantage of statistically, or are people from out of county using this more than anything else?
Yep. I believe that this is full federal funding.
Yes.
Therefore, it shouldn't matter.
In fact, it can't.
Who's using it?
It does matter to me because it's the Westchester Medical Center.
But they're being funded fully.
That's not my point, Judy. My point is that it is the Westchester Medical Center providing these services, and I want to know
for a fee.
For whatever the it is paid for by the federal government. So statistically, I think community services should have this back. And that is the point. I'm not questioning who, when, or what, but I'm curious to know how many. And again, as a suggestion, I think this is an item that community services should have.
Is this item just in budget?
No, it's in community services.
Yes.
So, Mr. Chairman, do you want to?
Numerically, this is obviously it's a no-brainer. You're right. It makes sense. Right. So this is a pass through. I understand it. I always question because again, we have a medical center that's very expensive, and other counties avail themselves of their services. And it's good to have this statistical information. If we could have it by the time community services meet, that would be good. But other than that, a motion is in order for budget and appropriation.
So moved.
Second. Okay, moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
All
aye.
Opposed? Thanks so much, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right. So there's no more priority withdrawal. Sally?
Yeah, the others, they were in the meeting, and we moved them.
All right, we have minutes, people.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Monday, October 18th. Mm-hmm. Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Trent Tacoste is here for that. Yeah, sure.
I'm going to do with Larry, but she can do it on her own.
Heavy.
Heavy lift. She's up to it.
When Budget Director Saul comes up, we can ask him as well.
All right. That concludes all the items for approval. So now all the items continuing are for discussion purposes only. So which item are you referring to, Mr. Jacob?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This particular item is one that the board approved, which was for...
Request and performance measure report?
Healthcare contribution? It's Act Number 90, which was a modification of Act 90, 2010, which pertains to the health insurance plan. And that particular item was one where the questions for the law department are about the act itself. Can you let the members of the committee know, do you, Mr. Chairman, let the members of the committee know who the people that could be impacted based on the legislation itself? Who is eligible for this legislation?
Well, this proposed amendment only intended to include, as it was, all county officers appointed for a fixed term and non-represented managerial employees, excluding those from the Westchester Community College, who retired in 2010 in accordance with the early retirement under Chapter 105 of the laws of Westchester County, of the laws of 2010, with at least 30 years of service, including retirement service credits according to the New York State retirement system. The previous act had a provision that allowed for all of the same group of individuals to retire who had over 30 years of service with Westchester County. With this particular revision, there were, I guess, a few, I don't know how many officers that would, you would have to ask the other departments as to how many officers had 30 years of service from Westchester, plus maybe some other state entity. So that was the intention of including this.
Thank you. So the legislation, as written, as proposed for amended, which was approved by the board, would only impact the people that retired in 2010 under that act. Now, you don't have the list, the number of people. We actually do have that list, but that's
part
not...
Part A or Part B or Part
A. Right. It's A or B, but the eligible list of people, when Director Saul comes up, he can give us that list again. But can anyone else be eligible for this? Is there like some gray area that we did not see when we authorized and had this legislation created, or only the only people that would be eligible for this are non-represented and fixed term employees, right?
Well, and also this is specifically with respect to Chapter 105 of the laws of 2010. Doesn't include any amendments to that.
Oh, so that means they would have had to take advantage of Part
A. Part A or Part B of the early retirement.
There's no way someone else could jump in on this particular thing, and I mean, the way that the legislation is written right now, it could not be utilized by someone 10 years from now or anything like that. This is just for this particular time if the legislation is not amended.
And that's the curious thing. I mean, I guess if you're trying to think of, like, scenarios, the only other scenario I could think of would be if somehow the state legislation, Chapter 105, was somehow amended of the state legislature. But other than that, I'm really at a loss. The intention for this was, I thought, for the end of this year.
And to your knowledge, from the legislation when we enacted it, the people that are represented, etc., they already get that benefit. Based on their contractual obligation. So there's not something that someone could get extra because of that, you know, line that was in there.
Actually, this this, I believe, only applies to non-represented managerial employees.
Only to non-represented managers. It doesn't apply to anybody else.
Because the other provision with respect to the other individuals has to be with 30 years of Westchester County service, I believe.
Understood. Well, thank you. Thank you,
Mr. So we are expecting which numbers from
Commissioner Soule was going to, excuse me, Budget Director Soule was going to come up and reiterate what we already received at this table, that there were six people that were eligible for this particular item. As a matter of fact, in the county executive's veto mentioned, he did identify and mention that there was only six people that were eligible, but he also indicated that that this particular modification might set some sort of precedent, and clearly from the legislation as it was enacted, as it was drafted, enacted, and approved by the board, only could apply to the people that were non-represented managers that retired under Section 105. You know, I mean, it's very specific. So that's, just wanted to make sure we had that clarification from our law department, which was so kind in writing this particular modification.
Actually, I wasn't on the draft.
What's the law department?
Right. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I just have a question on this issue. I think we've dealt with it.
But we have one question.
It's more of a policy question, because I'm still trying to understand. I know it's six people, but when we originally passed this, it was, as I understand it, people working for Westchester County. And then we made this change. But I'm still a little confused. And I guess we have six people, so I mean there are facts behind this, but you know, without knowing all those facts, hypothetically someone could have worked for the town of Harrison for 25 years and had a different type of retirement arrangement, whether contributing to health or whatever the pension was, and then they come work for the county the last 2 years or 3 years, and then we're giving them this sort of, you know, 30-year benefit as a county worker. So I'm just trying to understand it again.
That's actually a great question, because Mr. Chairman, which are the policy for Westchester County, if you know what it is, that's fine. That says you have to have the minimum service to retire from Westchester County. Period. So we did not change the policy for any retiree. So someone could work for the Harrison,
for example. People who took advantage on our first round, they didn't necessarily work for 30 years for the county. I mean, it sounded like
they
worked for Westchester County for 30 years.
Correct.
That's not necessarily just the minimum.
When we enacted the legislation, we did it as part of the voluntary separation. We had not opted into the state plan at that time. So this modification was done to, you know, to capture these individuals that now are in the state retirement system, and all those people that you're referring to would have to be in the state retirement system. So whether they worked for a different municipality, they would still have been part of the state retirement system.
Okay, so the pension was the same whether they're working outside Correct. The county or inside the county. So
that's right.
This is purely pension, which is the same.
Correct.
Gotcha.
And the issue, again, because it was the same, and that was the point, that we actually did and found out the individuals, the minimum individual out of the six had 10 years of service in the county, which was double the amount that they needed to be eligible for a retirement from the county, right, period. And then we did the additional research on that one individual who we know was in the IT department when it was outsourced, and the legislature sued the county executive, won the lawsuit, but the service time was not bridged back. So that person lost 9 months of service time. So they had 29 years and 3 months of service in Westchester County, and for the 9 months when it was outsourced to IBM, they lost that time. And again, you know, there's things that are just right.
There's a very minimal financial impact.
Make sure I understood the policy. Yeah. Right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. We have Chief of Staff Oroz here. Mr. Oroz, if you don't mind joining us for a couple of unnumbered items here. Questions on vehicles and Resolution 108 Performance Measures Report.
Okay.
Good morning.
I gave Sally the vehicle. So I don't know what you want to start with.
Let's go with vehicles and then.
Okay.
Thank you.
Where's the audience today? No
League of Women Voters.
Everybody listens to the tape now.
We're making it. Journalism's here to cover
over the tape. Yeah, and with the web stream, then no one will have to come. Right?
The Yankees are
but
out of
it. Millions. Millions.
And, wait. The Yankees and the Phillies. And
no one's watching this World Series except...
Well,
the fans.
And if you have cable vision, there's no chance to watch it anyway.
They lucked out because I'll tell you, if the Yankees ran, we'd lose a lot of customers.
Yes. That's true.
Okay. All right, Josh.
Okay, the first chart, some of you may have the... one with the little green on it. Other
right.
The, okay.
Can you hold 1 second until we all
yeah,
have
sure.
It?
Yeah,
sure. No. I spoke.
Okay, be boy.
We're being punished.
Thank you.
Hold on.
One more. Thank you.
Okay.
This is a fairly comprehensive list of the vehicles, indicating whether it went home in the last 3 years, whether we're reimbursed, where the vehicle's located in the evening hours, and whether it is an unmarked vehicle or has the logo on the side, or whether it has emergency light. So I'll give you guys some time. The one thing I'd like to point out is there are 7 less vehicles that are given to various commissioners. That was done earlier this year. And they
7 less than?
Than in 2009. The feeling was that some of the commissioners who previously had vehicles, there was no rationale for them having a take-home vehicle. And there will probably be, in this year's budget, an elimination further of some other vehicles from commissioners. Not obviously from essential personnel. As you can see, a lot of them are in corrections, public safety, health department, where people are on 24-hour call and do have to respond. Same with environmental facilities.
George, can you please provide to a senior budget staff a list of all individuals? Huh? Yeah, and the highlight is that the county executive is not there.
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Where?
He's here. No, sir. Second page.
Yeah, he's here.
And oh, there he is, with school. His Mariner hybrid.
Right.
But is it using 2 vehicles?
No.
Because I've seen some detail assigned to him with the same car that the county executive had. And
this is the vehicle he has access to that he takes home. Sometimes when he is here and he goes to an event,
well,
sometimes he
will
be picked up in a unmarked vehicle. Yes, and driven there.
No, but unmarked vehicle, is it the same vehicle that Andy used to use? Or?
No. Andy's vehicle disappeared. We never
found
it.
It was sold.
We don't know. No one ever.
It was sold. Weird. I think you'd...
No, it was sold. Right? It was.
I don't. You guys may know. We did. We couldn't find an answer to where it went.
You didn't have the VIN number or anything like that.
Okay. But from what I recall about this whole scenario is that the county executive actually had. They have some. There's a budget. There's a capital budget fund for that, and that was where those cars come from. So for the county exec now and in the past and the future, that's my understanding was that was sold. I think he said it.
No, because the car that I saw downstairs looked just like it, so I was wondering if it was the same car.
No, the vehicle, because I've gone with the county executive to things during the day, it's usually a Crown Victoria.
It is.
Crown Victoria. The prior county executive had a Lincoln Town car.
Thank you.
They look similar, but they're
No, but where is that one kept?
The Lincoln Town car?
Uh-huh. When
we took office, we could not find that car.
Saying is, the vehicle that he uses when he's driven...
That's public safety.
Right, it's a public safety vehicle.
It's a public safety,
yes.
Yeah, public safety reported that when they came in the middle of the year that the county executive has a detail, right, that they
He does not have a detail. What he does is... He drives himself to work.
if he is going somewhere during the day, particularly if it's an area where he needs to get to, you know, where he's on a tight schedule, the public safety will send an officer over in an unmarked vehicle to take him there and bring him back here. But there's no detail. There's nobody that stays with him upstairs or anything like that.
Does the public safety person get overtime for doing that?
No. It's always done through somebody. It's usually just during the day. In the evening, Rob drives himself to wherever he's got to go.
In fairness for the county executive, I think there's none of us that believe that the county executive should not have a driver to go through all those events, right? And certainly public safety is responsible for the county executive, and I don't think it would be prudent for us to be sitting and suggesting that the county executive shouldn't have that and ask for that level of detail. But there is certainly a level the county executive is driven around at times by a public safety member.
Sometimes,
it is not a detail.
Sometimes by me.
Right, exactly. Sometimes by you and other folks.
Going somewhere,
right.
Yeah, do you get overtime? No, just kidding. No.
So, I mean, in fairness to it, is that when we get to public safety, I'm sure that we'll ask them to see the at least the line item for that because they would have to account for it. But the county executive, as all the previous county executives, both Democrat and Republican.
Mr. Jenkins, you won't get any argument for
not from any of us.
There are no mad people out there that probably want his head.
But we would never say it that way. We would say that we would never want to see, I'm sure the commissioner sheriff would not want to see something on his watch happened, just like Commissioner Sheriff Belfiore sat at the table and said, you know, this detail or this security is necessary. It's just an unfortunate time out there, and the county executive deserves to have that level of protection. So we're not, I don't think we're fussing about it. We just want to make sure that there's clarity on it, that there's the detail.
I represent Southwest Yonkers. People are mad down there. I remember when I was first running for office, county executive, Andy Spano came to Tibbetts Park, and there was a big to-do, and they had to take him out of there. And he had nothing to do with him at that moment, but he was the top elected official at that moment, and people were mad, and they had to take him out. So, George, I mean, it was Rob that made an issue of dismantling the detail, but honestly, I never agreed
I think Rob's pledge when he ran,
he would drive himself.
He would drive himself to work, and drive himself home from work, which he has. He does not have a detail to pick him up or take him, and he doesn't have a detail that stays with him. You know, in the previous administration, there was a detail upstairs that stayed with the county executive during the workday. So he doesn't do that. But sometimes, as needed, they will make a request from public safety to send somebody over to get him somewhere and get him back.
All right. Any other questions on vehicles?
The second sheet is the list. I think you'd requested vehicles purchased from a certain date and time up and through today. I should have asked John Hsu. I see some of them say grant, some of them say cap, which is capital, some of them are grant. The ones that don't say anything, I got to be honest with you, I'm not sure if they were paid out of cash or whether, if you see some of them don't have any, they have an account code, but it doesn't say capital or grant. So
yeah, and that was the following question.
I'll have to find that out.
What account?
Well, it's charged to the budget of the department, but the question is whether it's out of cash, whether it's a capital purchase or a grant.
That would probably be more.
Olivia?
The ones that say cap, can you give us a capital account that it's being charged to?
Sure.
How are we doing? I know there's some postponement of purchase of a lot of equipment, and cars are one of them. Is the administration planning on, I mean, these cars are really beat up out there.
Well, what we're doing, first of all, there's been a, not necessarily the public safety, that's a whole different issue, but there's been a reduction in the fleet, and as you know, there's already been a reduction in the workforce, which translates into a reduction in the need for certain vehicles. So, for instance, the seven commissioners who gave up vehicles, those vehicles didn't just disappear. If they have low mileage, we are using them in other places to fill in for vehicles that have, you know, have lived out their useful life. And that's how we're trying to manage it now because, you know, frankly, we're going to need less vehicles because of, A, the way we're going to utilize personnel, and B, there is less personnel working right now than there was beginning of this year, and will probably be less next year.
So you're comfortable that vehicle-wise, with the postponement of purchase, and so on and so forth, that we should be fine?
We should be.
And not an additional increase in maintenance or anything like that?
Well, there may be, but that increase in maintenance would be offset by not having to purchase another vehicle. I mean, certainly we're not going to let any of our employees use a vehicle that's not functioning properly or safe. So,
Mark?
Yes, just one question, George, on page 3 in DOT. I'm just a little disappointed to see 3 Chevy Palas were purchased. I mean, we don't have GM operating the county anymore. But, you know, I thought we were trying to get to 100% hybrid where we can. And public safety is a different story. But this, I'm just curious, is the 3 DOT Liberty Lines purchased in July of this year with Chevy and Palas?
I can't answer that other than to say that perhaps they were the lowest bid.
Right, but it's, but we have had a commitment the last couple of years
to hybrids.
To getting hybrids purchased. So,
well, at least if they were the Malibu that now claims to be hybrid.
The Palas.
Yes,
it might be
Olivia.
Hybrid.
I just want to make sure I'm interpreting this correctly. For the corrections commissioner, so under 2010 status, he does not take the vehicle home.
Correct.
Where the vehicle is located at night is confidential.
Well, yeah, I don't know why it says that, but I'll have to check. Let me double check on that because he may be taking it home. Otherwise, there's no need for it to say confidential next to it. So let me check on that.
Any other questions?
Does not
take
home.
So. Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Crown Vicks, the police, they have special needs. Is that why? It looked like they bought a bunch of 2008 ones, so those may have just been overstocked that they did. I mean, just to find out, it looks like they put them actual in service dates 2008, October. So well, it looks like they might have got a good sale somewhere, and if that came true, that would be really good.
These vehicles are usually bought off state bid.
Okay.
So it's possible that the state, you had other counties and towns throughout the state that didn't
take need, them.
You know, and so they were on order already from Ford Motor, and so we were able to get them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lewis.
Now, and the EX on the reimbursement to county means excluded or?
Yeah.
That's a good question.
It's pretty obvious.
I don't think we get reimbursed for anything.
It applies to you, so I don't
know. Do you pay for your car?
I don't think any of us get reimbursed for these.
No.
No.
Right.
So, like gasoline, things like that, not reimbursed for
anything. Again, you can peruse these documents, and if you have additional questions, either email or we do it, Jim. Olivia, any other concerns? We're fine?
No.
All right.
We have that as well.
George. The next is the resolution. You probably have already an answer for it, and I don't know.
Well, there are two types of performance management, and I'm not sure which one was the one you're looking for. There was a performance management the prior administration did, but they pulled the plug on it in September of 2009. It was a process where they used an outside consultant of some sort. But they discontinued it prior to us coming into office. So we have no familiarity with that. The other performance measurement that is done is continuing to be done. It is done primarily through DSS. And what they do is they have a rating scale of 1 to 10. They rate various services, and they give a pass-fail grade. And these performance measurements are used on an annual basis when they go to contract with a particular agency to make sure, A, that they've passed, and B, if they're stacked up against somebody else, if somebody has a better grade. They're also used if we terminate a contract as something so that it's not just somebody making a decision without some sort of tool.
And I think that's... So, Olivia, to that point, just clarify that.
Okay. As indicated in the resolution,
right.
We asked for with the last two quarterly performance measure reports from each county community-based organization or not-for-profit agency with a contract in excess of $50,000. So what we're looking for are the quarterly performance measures that go along with the contract.
Okay.
The other performance measures that you referred to, the board did not receive those.
Right, that's correct.
So
we were not asking for information that the administration would have had. The board never received that information.
Okay. So what did you,
with the
do you have a copy of, because when I checked this out with DSS, everybody else, the only ones they're aware of are these that are used internally.
No, most of the contracts had performance measures, and I believe they're still continued, as is evidenced in the ANC resolutions.
That's correct.
Because the ANC resolutions refer to the performance.
But I was told that these internal documents are used with the ANC. So if you have, does anybody have whatever the board, because I never
it's
got
them. It's not what the board did not receive them before.
Okay.
Each county department that had a contract with performance measures
that's
received quarterly performance measures from the agency.
From the agency.
So
the agency.
We're asking for copies of those quarterly performance
what the agency
reports
gives to the county.
Correct.
So WHID might give
an
outside contract.
Correct.
Okay.
So whichever county department has the contract with the agency, that county department should have been receiving quarterly performance reports, as is referenced in the, would be referenced in the contract itself.
Okay. And, but the Board of Legislators has never received those in the past.
No, we have not. Okay.
Except for our own contracts.
Yeah, correct.
Except
okay.
for whatever
to
is
my
out.
Knowledge, we have not requested
and,
those.
And again, it is important information to us as we review it, everything as you're reviewing as much as you can, budgetarily.
Is there...
I don't know. I have to find out. I was really confused because the first information we got was the one, the program that was canceled last September.
No, we
by the previous
did
administration.
Did the board say that was what we were looking for?
No, they said performance. I was told by our department heads that this is the evaluation that they use as an internal form where they measure the performance of every contract vendor. And, you know, that we do not share for lots of reasons. It's,
right,
there's proprietary information in there.
Yes,
there's a lot of things like that. But it is used as an internal measuring stick so that when contracts are up for renewal, we have a yardstick to measure them against in terms of whether they should be renewed or not or whether there's improvement needed. What you're talking about now, because, you know, I guess we... If the legislature's never seen it before, that's why I had no knowledge
of
whatever
it was.
No,
that's not what we asked. I thought we were clear in the discussions as to what we were looking for.
Well, these are called, the language used in the resolution that called for...
The last two quarterly
performance
measure reports. Right, but that's, but when you, when we went through our archives, what we found with performance measurement report is this memo from Susan Tolchin back in September that canceled that.
Right, the board would not have had that. So we
right,
would have
but
asked
I,
for it.
Yeah, but you also said you never had this either. So
but we
I'm
know
not
that
sure.
The performance reports exist because they're referenced in the ANC resolution.
Right, and I guess what I'm telling you is that I am told that that is derived from these forms, which are the internal
no.
forms.
No.
Okay, so let me find out what you're talking about then and see if I can get it.
Okay. So is there an estimated time frame as to when
I'll do it this afternoon and hopefully I get it. If it exists and it's something that we have, I'll get it to you.
Well, it should be built into every contract, so the department should be getting it because that's how they're measuring performance level.
Yeah, but you're asking for a quarterly report of that, not,
right.
not every contract.
Which is required by the vendor.
Contract, right.
Yeah. The law department should be able to provide some guidance.
Well, that's who I had in this meeting. I had law and DSS. Yes, correct. They told
I
me this
that,
is...
Jim Robertson, because he's involved with the ANC process and handles the contract.
And again,
that's
why I was instructed that those reports on ANC were derived from these internal documents. And that's what I was told.
That's fine.
So I'll look into it.
So when will you get back to
us? As soon as I can. Before your next budget meeting, next Monday?
It was up in the air, but not for
well, definitely before the 8th.
All right, now we're down to, George, he's overdue already, and the committee is very concerned. This request,
quarterly performance measure reports.
In there. And believe me, it is important information. As much as you are reviewing, we also want to review once the county executive releases the budget, we want to check everything.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
and just want to point, the reports of the RUHR report from that they send into to the county by the contract. So The reason we're asking for that is because what ends up happening is in A and C, we ask for the same thing all the time. So as opposed to doing that, we've said, let's just get it for everybody. And now we can help streamline the process and try to take some pressure off of the not only the departments in the times that they're doing with less staff, but more importantly, we can make sure to understand what the contract agency said they were going to do versus what they're actually doing, because we might need to adjust their numbers down based on what they're doing or not doing. So, thank you.
It's okay.
It shouldn't be. We weren't trying to ask for extra work. It should be pretty. Thanks, Joy.
Okay. So we have Budget Director Stoll for discussion on the options for payment of the New York State pension bill. George, I need to talk to you also.
Okay.
Good morning. How are you, Eli?
I'm good.
Were you aware, Larry, that the NYSAC did a presentation on this particular item?
They had a webinar. I didn't participate in that, but I was involved in another one with GFOA, so.
But are you familiar with what they're suggesting a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. I'm as up to speed as you can be, because they're not exactly, when I say they, the retirement system isn't exactly being forthright in explaining all of the specifics of this program. And there's still a lot of details that are, you know, still yet to be explained. They're supposedly putting forth regulations. I mean, the legislation is written in a way where the comptroller is the one that develops the regulations for this. So there's some aspects to it that are still fairly murky, if you will, in terms of, you know, what we would be signing up for if we, you know, elected to participate in this program. And if you want me to, you know, go.
No, let's go directly to the item of concern, which is the options that we have and so on. So whatever
There is some information on the comptroller, on the retirement system website, that does explain some of the details of it. What it is is they're allowing participants in both the ERS and the PFRS to defer a portion of the pension bill. And the way that they are structuring this is that right now our rate for next year is in the neighborhood of 16%. So it's gone up from 11.5% to basically 15.8% if I use the blended rate. Okay. That's about a 36% increase in our pension contribution. And just as a way of background, it's expected to, you know, go up until 2015. So by 2015, it's possible that our rate will be 30% of salaries for ERS and 40% for PFRS. And that's based on conversations I've had with the state actuary at the retirement fund when I was up in Albany last year, and we were looking at some of these various bills that were put forth, which, you know, frankly, isn't sustainable to be able to afford that for most municipalities, including counties. The way they structure it is, if our contribution rate, say, is 15.8%, they're setting a base rate at 9.5%. They call that the mitigated rate, so that's what you would pay. The difference between the 9.5% and the 15.8, or just say 16 for argument's sake, is what you would amortize. You would pay that off as a loan over 10 years. They set the rate, the comptroller sets the rate, and he set the first amortization at 5%. Every year, you can elect whether or not you're going to defer your payment. However, once you opt in once, you're in the program in perpetuity, or until the law is changed. And what that means exactly, that you're in the program for perpetuity, that's what I'm trying to find out. Because there is, essentially, if you don't opt in any given year, my understanding is there's a penalty that you would pay. And what I'm being told by our contact at the retirement system is it could be anywhere between 1% and 10%. Well, that really isn't a good answer to me. I mean, that's a pretty broad range. I mean, they need to be more specific. And they haven't developed the rules on this, the regulations, to really see how it works. And they're being very cagey as far as explaining how it works. So they're really asking you to, you know, sign on the bottom line when not telling you what you're signing up for, basically. So, and then each year thereafter, that mitigated rate, say it starts at 9.5, it can only go up by 1% each year. And then it can only go down by 1% each year. So the question I posed is, well, what if you opt in the first year, and then every year thereafter you elect not to amortize, what rate are you going to pay? Are you going to pay the actuarially required rate, which is what the actuary sets the rate at to have a fully funded pension system, or are you going to pay some other rate? And they can't tell me what rate you're going to pay. And at some point in the future, if you amortize every year with rates going up the way they are to 30% for ERS by 2015, you're eventually going to be paying more than what you otherwise would have once you layer all these loans on top of one another. And it's completely left up to the discretion of the comptroller to set the interest rate that you're going to pay on each of these loans. Presumably, it should be based on some kind of a market, you know, rate, but... again, it's up to the discretion of the comptroller. The way they're saying is, it says if the fund could buy a GE bond yielding 5%, or they can loan money to the participants in the fund and ask them to pay 5%, they're looking at it, I mean, this is their argument, if you will, as an investment, another investment, because there's an opportunity cost for that money that they're loaning to the municipalities. What does that mean for the county? For 2010, it's basically, if you combine ERS and PFRS, the amount we can defer is $7.4 million. That's the difference between the mitigated rate, the 9.5 rate, and what the actuary would require to have an actuarially sound retirement system.
How much again?
7.4. And then they estimate a rate for 2012, which we would pay in 2011, because we always pay our payment early to get a discount on that. So, you know, 2011's payment we'll pay this year, 2012 will pay in 2011. If I combine the two numbers that they've given us, and it's overstated because they don't take into account the reduction in the number of employees. They're using salaries as of March 31st. So it's a very preliminary estimate. Combining the two together, that's $24.6 million, combining ERS and PFRS together, that they're saying we could defer in 2012 or 2011 for 2012. I think it's closer to $21.5 million if we factor in what our current salary levels are. I mean, so they are somewhat overstating that. But then each year thereafter, you know, you would be allowed to defer. And if our rate's going up to 30%, it starts at 9.5, then we go to 10.5, 11.5, 12.5. And the difference between what the actuary is saying, you know, you'd have to pay to have a fully funded pension system, and that so-called mitigated rate is what you pay, plus the payment on the amortizations that you keep layering one on top of the other, assuming that you continue to do that each year. And then eventually you would be paying more than what you otherwise would have, because when rates start going back down, they're not going to lower your rate to what the actuary is saying. It's going to be some higher rate. So that's really the rub with this thing, is they can't really explain what you're signing up for. And so at this point, it's very difficult for me to make an educated recommendation whether or not to do this without knowing the specifics. And, you know, So that's kind of where we are with this, and we're trying to press them. Every time we press them, it's sort of like a Hobson's choice. You know, it's like, you know, they're almost telling you have to do this. I mean, because, you know, how is anyone going to afford 30% or 40% on the pension in 2015? And they're not publicly saying that's what it's going to be, but I think most of the experts, even DOB, has projections in their budget that show the rates going up to those kind of levels out in the future. So. You know, that's kind of where it is. And you know, in a normal environment, is it something you would want to do? Probably not, because I equate it to you take out a home equity loan to pay your mortgage payment. Yeah. That's not something you can...
Robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Peter, may I ask you?
So, I mean, that's my take on it. But.
I have Mr. Burton, Rogowski, and Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The potential in, it sounds like year three, if I caught that right, mm-hmm. is that we would, for the first time, be making a greater payment than we would if we just paid it straight.
It might not be as early as year three. It could be further out in the future when those two lines...
Yeah, I was just trying to graph it in my head.
But I would say probably four or five years out.
The risk that we face here is that not, I mean, the reason we would even consider doing this is because of our budget situation.
Correct.
And therefore, having that thing loom over us, let's say in the 2013 budget, mm-hmm. is truly frightening. It seems to me, because that wipes out virtually any reserve that's hanging around.
Absolutely.
And any tax
And yet, if we don't do avail ourselves of this, then we're in completely in the soup for having to make attainable cuts to get to a zero, if that's what we're talking about, in the immediate near term. And that's just unbelievable to me that could be our choice. But am I describing it more or less?
I think you're describing it right, and not to be, you know, totally doom and gloom, but even if we were to do this, we're still looking at significant deficits out in the future.
Right, going up to the 30%.
That's right. I mean, and a lot of counties, I mean, I talked to a lot of the other counties, no one really wants to do this, but a lot of other counties don't even have any fund balance to go to, so it's almost, they don't have a choice. Or municipalities or school districts, or, I mean, well, this isn't the teacher's system, but, you know, municipalities are having to make these choices too. And that's assuming those contribution rates are assuming that the fund earns an 8% return. So it's not saying that they're going to stay flat. That's assuming an 8% return.
Oh.
Because of the fact that
five, eight.
Yeah. I mean, that's their, well, they dropped it to 7.5. So actually, the rates may be even higher because they dropped their assumed rate of return from 8 to 7.5. The comptroller did. But because they're still not back to where they were at one point, and they count on those earnings or returns in the fund to pay the benefits, and so, you know, and they amortize their loss, their, you know, market gains or losses over a 5-year period, so there's sort of a smoothing. So they're still sort of realizing those losses, you know, out in the future, and so that assumes there's an 8% return. I didn't adjust it down to 7.5, but if we don't achieve an 8% return, then we're looking at even potentially higher rates, you know, per year. And they have 70% in equities, 30% in debt. So what's your average return on debt right now? It's not, the yield isn't very much. So when you average that in, you know, actually the return on equities has to be even higher than 8%, has to be closer to 10, 11, maybe 12% to get a blended rate of 8%. So, I mean, I hope that's what happens for the sake of my, you know, 401k and, you know, so forth, but, you know, who knows? I mean, so I don't think that that's even a worst-case scenario, to be honest with you, that we could see 30% out in that point.
Wow.
It would not be unfair to say we're doomed, but it certainly sounds like we're screwed on this. There is no even reasonably hopeful way to get out of this.
No, I mean, you can't change benefits for vested employees.
Right.
You put Tier 5 in, and we're not going to see savings for that until they start hiring people at Tier 5 and know who's hiring. So, you know, the reality is, you know, and the reason New York has a fully funded pension from an actuarial standpoint, it's only one of four states because we pay a lot to keep it that way,
right.
You know. And, you know, the only way to really, you change the benefit level, that's the only option you have, or you reduce the number of employees that you're, you know, accruing pension benefits. Those are the other, you know, options. And we don't control the first one. The benefit level is dictated by what the state does. You know,
In various contracts.
And you can't change that for existing, that's constitutional, you know, contractual, I guess, obligation you have to existing employees, but you can change it for new employees going forward.
All right. Thank you for all that.
I wish I could have better news.
Right.
Yeah, let me.
I think we should shoot the messenger.
First of all,
please don't do that.
All right, first of all, in terms of the 2011 budget,
yes.
Are you able to tell us? You say you're not happy about trying to make recommendations. You know, fresh, but
yeah.
Where do you stand with 2011 budget? Is going to have you made? I mean, I assume you're going to print. Have you made recommendations to the county executive at this point?
Well. At this point, I can't recommend to do it unless we know specifically what it is we're signing up for.
Okay, so it sounds like if the controller's office doesn't come out with the rules in the next, you know, week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever, it's going to be what it's going to be. I hear you saying.
Yes.
Here's my concern. I mean, whatever tricks the controller may want to come up with to help cash flow for, as you say, a lot of counties in worse shape than we are, doesn't solve the problem.
No.
It just covers it over.
Yes.
It pushes higher costs to the future.
Yes.
So I'm not advocating this, but
right.
if the administration, if you were to decide that, you know, given this commitment to a zero and all this, you know, Mr. Burton talked about, you know, we're in trouble. My opinion,
we're only in trouble if you have to have a zero tax increase, you know. So, but given that's the goal, and certainly the administration has made that as a goal, it seems to me if you had to go down that road, I'm not a financial expert, but if one wanted to borrow, wouldn't it make more sense to borrow the county, just borrow itself 1 year at 2%?
Yeah, well,
and play that game, and if it didn't work the next year, you know, we could just keep borrowing at 2%. Why pay the control of 5% and go out, and once you're in the program, you're right. Committed forever. So I'm not advocating that, but yeah, if you were to decide that,
right,
that would be a better way to go, it seems
well,
to me.
No, I agree with you. I mean, obviously borrowing for operating expenses is never a long-term, you know, prudent financial practice, but I would say that, yeah, I mean, we could borrow at 2.5%.
Right, so we could go year by year.
But the problem is, under local finance law, for good reason, they don't allow you to do that.
Okay.
The only way we can do it is with the, you know.
I'm not an expert.
So the only way we can do it is with the pension. And the 5% rate, they're going to look at all the municipalities. Obviously, we're one of the the highest rated. We're going to get penalized for, you know, being.
Well, that's why I said, unless someone can really show me some good numbers, it doesn't sound like something I would want to support. Paying the 5% and going, as you say, not knowing the rules are, and pushing. What I work on, once again, it's like, well, I don't want to get sidetracked. It's like trying to solve the problem, but we're not solving the problem. You're just trying to cover it over to get by a year. This is not aimed at the administration. This is generally just.
Yeah, and we don't really control the problem.
I agree. So the controller's sitting up there saying, well, what can I do to help? Let me help you push the problem.
Right.
Out another 1, 2, 3 years, but you got to pay us 5%, and as you said, eventually year 3, 4, 5, you're paying even more if we don't solve the problem.
Right.
If that 30% is going to be 30%, unless someone solves the problem, we're just pushing numbers around.
Right.
And I believe we have an obligation, generally, not just to hit. Oh, we got to hit zero next year. We need to work the problem. But as you said, you wouldn't otherwise recommend this ordinarily.
No, even if I did know.
And
know,
so what's the driving force to recommend it? And you don't have to answer, but I would argue somebody out there wants to hit a certain number in the budget, and that becomes the driving force and not prudent financial planning. I believe we have an obligation to our taxpayers, not just for 1 year, not just for 2 years, but every year do what our financial experts tell us is financially prudent and appropriate, not to hit some politically motivated number. Again, not aiming this at you, but I'm just giving you my thoughts on it. So as you work towards your recommendation to the county executive as our budget director, I hope you will hold on to your financial responsibilities. So you're saying, again, if we wanted to borrow to kind of get around this, you're saying by state law we can't.
We cannot
borrow that 1%.
There is one thing that we should, you know, look to have in our legislative packages to allow us to borrow for the payment for the early retirement, which is estimated around $4.5 million over, you know, each year for 5 years. If we can, and that one incurs an 8% rate. They're charging us the full. Well, now I guess the rate dropped to 7.5, so let's assume it's 7.5. But we could borrow, you know, for 5 years, a lot cheaper than 5 years with the retirement system. So, you know,
and they did that back
in 2003. They passed legislation allowing.
We should go to our delegation and say, because we are financially in better shape. You know, NYSAC works really hard to help. They have to work with all the counties. They're lobbying on behalf of all counties.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If they just get the ability to borrow at any number,
right,
there, it helps the casual. In a different situation. So I'm very concerned as we get into this budget season, how we're going to, you know, we have certain political realities, and I recognize those,
but
we have financial obligations presently and to the future to everybody. So, and we can't borrow anything. So, okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
If I may ask staff to produce a memo that we go to file for the next year's legislative package on this point, and then present it to the appropriate committee at that time, just as a reminder in particular. I'm not sure who we could ask, but.
Mr. Jenkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Sure.
I think we already asked for that. I think a letter was drafted to the state committee that does that. That would be Senator Stuart Cousins' committee. So I believe that we asked that request that and it should absolutely be followed up in the package, because there was a question when we were going through the early retirement research to determine whether or not we could borrow for the money as we did in the past. And in speaking to the bill drafter themselves, they seemed to indicate they thought we could, although we need to see that legislation to do that. So we're looking for that enabling legislation or point out exactly in the legislation where it allows us to do that right now. So that was a question. There's two things. One, can we get, Mr. Chairman, to you for budget appropriations? We know you're in the throes of your first budget. You know, good luck, right? You look like you're getting some sleep still. You didn't fall at the end of the table. So
I was looking for gray hair. I don't see any yet.
Yeah, he's got the gray at the end. So, but if we could get some comparison so we could see some things. One is that we need to we got to go backwards and forwards. So we have to go backwards and say how much our contribution has been in the past, right? Because there were years we didn't contribute anything, right? And we were able to, or we did, right? Because we were smarter than the average bear. And then show us again in your analysis about paying the money early, you know, versus, you know, holding out maybe a little bit and see what the difference is, see the difference on the interest rate, see the because if we're in a situation where we'd rather, as you said, keep your cash, you know, what you're not going to use a home equity loan to do that. Well, you know, something, I'm not going to prepay my loan, even though I can get a better interest rate, because it's better for me to have my cash flow right now. So, you know, we need to understand all of those scenarios so that when, you know, we finally get to budget time, we can make appropriate decisions. So if we can get that to the chairman, again, we know that, you know, you're in the throes of this budget, but to be able to see the analysis to say, well, on a spreadsheet, this looks like it may make sense and it doesn't make sense because of X, Y, Z with all those combinations. And again, understanding that it may take a little bit of extra time to get that, but we would need that. Thanks. I don't answer.
All right. Rock and a hard place, and we're in the middle. We had Law explained to us on this item, and Kenny, we just wanted. The numbers of people affected, only six retirees.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You want the item? Here.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you. Nice throw, though. Right? On item Act number 90-2010, which was where it's the act that amended Act 41-2010, which was the contributions for healthcare, and in our financial impact statement, we saw that the total current impact was, you know, $2,800 to $8,000. And Law testified to us this morning that the only people that could be eligible, based on this legislation, are the individuals that retired in 2010. Under Chapter 105 of the laws of 2010. So no one else could be eligible. It could be sneaking in. We just wanted to confirm with you that the individuals, the final number of individuals, because their financial impact was prepared before we knew who the individuals were. Now we had an identification of the individuals. There were six people that were going to be impacted by that. Has that number changed as far as you know, budget is aware of? Has that number changed at all? Can anybody? No one else has jumped in, et cetera. I mean, we're really concerned about making sure that financially we had the right information, at least from budget, that said that this is the cost to the county, and no one else could be involved. It's only for non-represented management.
And that was only with respect to Part A of the, or
it's actually Part A or Part B
or Part B. Right. I mean, so we could.
That was the total numbers was 8,200, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, we don't know who's going to take Part B at this point. I mean,
but we knew, we had a list of people that could be eligible.
Could take it. I don't think it's going to be a large number, but, I mean, again,
that have 30 years of service in the state retirement system. Right. So, I mean, it's not just anybody.
Right. It's a very small.
I mean, we the number we took was the entire universe, and the top number was $8,200. So we're really trying to get to in this scenario is to make sure that the assertions that were made from a financial perspective that this could have impact long-term impact on anybody else. Law already clarified for us the only people that could be eligible for this are people that retired in 2010, so it's not going to impact any negotiations, et cetera, because it's only for non-represented management. The represented people already have the ability to have their benefits paid for in their retirement right now, so that's something they're working on as far as their negotiations, but this would have no impact on there.
So, as you can say, an impact. Just get us a updated fiscal impact statement. Sure. I guess that would
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other business to come before this committee? Otherwise, a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
We stand adjourned. Thanks so much. We're not meeting next Monday. So on the 8th, hopefully we'll see you all here at 10 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Saying we are, but we're just like they are.
there's a thought there. Having another night card at one of our executives, if you will.
Okay, I'll look at the
power. John, do you want to go back to your phone? You
No, because I want to make sure it works when I'm not connected. So I'll go get